I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Fraudulent transactions are now being reported across the country as a result of that data breach at Home Depot. As many as 56 million credit cards could have been compromised. Other major retailers have had similar data breaches in recent years. Target, Michaels, Neiman Marcus. Why does this keep happening? And what can be done to protect consumer information? Midday technology contributor Sean Gallagher is the Baltimore-based IT editor for Condé Nast's Ars Technica. Today, he looks at that story and others from the cyber world, including the ongoing hacks that call into question Apple's iCloud security in the wake of more celebrity nude photo leaks. That's all next on Midday, after the news from NPR. And welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks with you again here, Monday through Friday, noon to 2 on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City and the Eastern Shore, and streaming live online through WYPR.org, our website. Thanks again for making Midday part of your day. Women's soccer star Hope Solo and the actresses Vanessa Hudgens, Mary-Kate Olsen, Aubrey Plaza, and Hayden Panettiere are just the latest celebrities to become the victims of cyber hackers following a large release of private pictures purloined from personal devices. At the beginning of the month, a trove of celebrity photos, including nude photos of the Academy Award winner Jennifer Lawrence, were released after reportedly being snatched from Apple's iCloud. As many as 100 celebrities might have been exposed. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has confirmed it's investigating the leaks. Beyond making news headlines because of the obvious celebrity factor, the leaks have raised larger questions about the safety of information that's stored on the virtual cloud. Just how safe is that data, and what can be done to make it safer? Similar questions have arisen following another major hack, this one involving consumers, a major retailer. As many as 56 million credit cards could have been compromised as a result of the recent Home Depot data breach over a five-month period. That hack lasted 5 months, and that has resulted in fraudulent transactions showing up across the country. The Wall Street Journal had a story about this a couple of days ago. Criminals using stolen credit card information to buy prepaid cards, electronics, and even groceries. In some cases, the fraudulent transactions have been tracked to batches of cardholder accounts that are tied to specific zip codes. This is according to the Wall Street Journal story the other day on the Home Depot breach. And there have been other breaches earlier last year. Target, Michaels, Neiman Marcus, even Goodwill Industries has been hit. I didn't know about that, but Sean Gallagher did. Sean Gallagher is with us. He wrote that story about Goodwill Industries. Sean Gallagher is the Baltimore-based IT editor for the technology site Ars Technica, the Condé Nast site, which is just full of information. And catching up with Sean, you know, the business that you're in, the profession that you're in, tech journalism, is always busy. But the last 6 weeks been very busy, Sean.
Well, yeah, between the Apple launch and yesterday the BlackBerry launch, although not too many people really cared about that.
Oh, I missed and, that. We have to talk about
right,
that.
and all of these security breaches. There's a lot going on. There's always a lot going on. And we've really entered a period in time where attacks against things online are stronger, are faster, are easier than defending against them. And what happened with Home Depot, what happened with Apple, in those cases, those breaches went on for long periods of time without anybody detecting them. And so we don't know how long ago people were harvesting data from various celebrities' accounts. We don't know how many places have been breached that we don't know about yet, because
it takes a while
going
to catch
after,
up, you mean?
Yeah, it takes a while to catch up. It takes a while to detect where things are going. It's what they call an advanced persistent threat in many cases in the retail world and in the corporate world and in the DOD. They call it an advanced persistent threat because people take a long time to go into these systems and get access to them. In the case of the iCloud breaches, this was what they call a brute force attack, where they were able to just throw passwords continuously at Apple's systems until they got the right ones. They were probably able to guess them because of celebrities using information that was publicly available, like things that were on their Wikipedia pages
mm-hmm.
to guess their passwords.
Mm-hmm.
But
say like the name of a pet or something
right,
like
exactly.
that. Jennifer Lawrence's favorite car or something.
Right, exactly.
See,
and so they were able to do this for over a long period of time without being detected. And because there was nobody watching for this sort of an attack. In the case of Home Depot, it went on for months. In the case of Goodwill Industries.
I was going to say, Goodwill, this story, you say it was almost a year?
It was over a year. It was 18 months.
18 months before
18
it was detected.
Before it was detected. And it wasn't just it wasn't just Goodwill Industries in this case. It was a provider who did their retail systems, and two other customers at least were affected for that period of time. And they have not been revealed. So we don't know how big that breach was. It could have been hundreds of millions of credit cards that were affected.
I went to Home Depot sometime in the last 6 weeks to 2 months, okay? And I used a credit card. What kind of risk am I at right now? What exactly might have happened to my credit card?
Well, the breach that happened that was found last month, it went on for some period of time. It affected specifically the self-checkout point-of-sale system. So if you went up to one of those self-checkout machines and you ran your card.
Last winter.
It could have been captured by this malware, this virus that was planted on all of these systems called Black POS. So POS is point of sale. So Black POS is this malware that was distributed throughout Home Depot's network to the point of sale systems in specific stores. And it basically works like a credit card skimmer. As you run your card through the reader on the payment system, the software actually looks into the memory of the computer that runs that system and grabs the information that is your credit card data right off of the magnetic stripe. And then it exports it, puts it in a package, sends it back across the internet through a gateway they created through Home Depot's network back to a server who knows where.
Okay. Somebody's running that server.
Somebody's running that server.
And that person is going to... Now what happens to that information from the magnetic strip of my credit card?
What has happened in the past with these, and this has happened to a lot of point-of-sale systems over the past few years. It hit Subway about 2 years ago. It's hit Target. It's hit other retailers, Michaels. What happens is the credit card data is then put onto a magnetic striped card, either a gift card or a fixed value credit card that somebody purchased, or in some cases even a blank credit card. They've gotten a hold of blanks for credit cards that have the magnetic stripes on them, and they are actually printed as counterfeit credit cards. People go into stores in various places, make big value transactions where they buy an Xbox or something like that, something that can easily be sold and turned into money again, or they buy gift cards. Because gift cards have cash value, and it can't be traced back to the credit card that purchased them.
Has anyone been caught doing this? I mean, it sounds like a pretty elaborate scheme. You'd need several people involved in it.
There have been some people caught doing this sort of thing. In fact, in the case of the Subway breach a few years ago, it was discovered that there was a ring in Europe. A bunch of Romanian hackers had basically set up a credit card printing factory in France, and we're going across the border to Belgium to these gambling parlors where they could run credit cards on slot machines and bet on soccer and things like that without having to have a credit card without having to have the type of credit card you use in Europe now, which has the chip and PIN capability on it.
Do we know the full fallout from the Target breach? Because that was in the millions.
That was in
Home
the millions.
Depot, the number we're using is 56 million. That's what Home Depot has said, and
yeah, I don't think
Target was like 40 million.
I don't think that there's been a final number on the cash value of that breach. The thing is that in the case of Target, a lot of those credit cards have already been, by the carriers, have already been swapped out. So I had my card, my bank card, get swapped after the Target breach because my bank said, we're not going to take any risks. We know you had transactions at Target. We're going to issue you a new
ATM. That happened
debit
with me
card.
Too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened with one of my other credit card carriers. They said, we're just going to issue you a new card.
Okay.
And the cost to most people is the additional cost of being a credit card customer because the credit card companies have to deal with all this fraud. They end up handling all this fraud internally and taking the hit when somebody makes a fraudulent transaction. That's going to change soon, though, because the credit card companies, Visa and MasterCard as a whole, are pushing retailers to move to a new standard, which is actually a very old standard, one that's been used in Europe for a number of years. It's referred to as chip and PIN. It's EMV. There's a smart chip on your card that gets read by a reader, and it encrypts your transaction data when you push the card into the reader. That hasn't been used by retailers because it requires a change of point-of-sale systems. And there are a lot of point-of-sale systems that are brand new that have the capability, but it's turned off because the retailers don't want to deal with it. But
you say it's been used in Europe for a while.
It's been used in Europe for a while. And it's not great. I mean, the crypto on it is not very strong. It's been shown to be breakable already.
But it's another
layer.
But
it's another layer. It makes it more expensive, right? So you can't do these mass grabs. But the credit card companies are going to start pushing liability for fraud to the retailers starting in October of 2015. So the next time this sort of thing happens, if somebody steals credit cards from Home Depot or somebody like that, and if they aren't using the chip and PIN code, and somebody does a transaction that's a fraudulent swipe, the retailer where that transaction is on the hook for the money.
410-662-8780. Dan Rodrigues here with Sean Gallagher from Ars Technica talking about the credit card hack of Home Depot, the latest one. If you'd like to join us during this hour of the show, if you have questions about this, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. Our toll-free number for midday in Baltimore, 866-661-9309. You can send a question by email, too. Try that address, midday@wypr.org, or tweet us a question to middaywypr or Dan Rodrigues. Just reading here from the Wall Street Journal story, Sean, there was something else I wanted to mention. Oh, a question for you. You mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, that if you use the self-checkout, you're particularly vulnerable?
Right. In the case of the Home Depot attack, the systems that were targeted were specifically the self-checkout systems. And those systems were running Windows XP. So
What does that mean?
Okay, so Windows XP is an operating system that Microsoft stopped supporting this year. And it was used widely in systems as an embedded operating system to run things like cash registers and other systems for years. And Microsoft told everybody out of the pool, move to Windows 7 for embedded because we're no longer going to support this. It's got too many vulnerabilities. And many companies have been very slow to move. I know that last year when I was in the hospital when I had a family member in the hospital, and I was looking around, a lot of the systems in the hospital running Windows XP. And Windows XP is on things like IV poles and things like that as an embedded operating system. So there's a lot of security issues around that because the software has been out there for so long and it's so heavily hacked that there are many, many ways to attack it very easily. So Windows XP was running on these point of sale systems on these self checkout machines. It could have been updated with new software at some point, but it just never was. And they focused on these machines because they didn't have anybody present on them to sort of watch what was going on, but also because they were easier to hit because they were running on this Windows XP operating system. The other registers at Home Depot, if you go to them, they use another piece of software.
You mentioned how you were issued, and many other people were issued, new credit cards after the Target breach.
Right.
Because your credit card company knew you had shopped at Target at some point. What about, could the same thing happen with Home Depot?
Oh, the same thing will happen.
That will happen, yeah.
As soon as credit card companies detect there are fraudulent charges going on your account, they're going to cut that account and they're going to send you a new card.
And we should be looking at our credit card statements.
Absolutely, especially if you've been to Home Depot in the last 6 months or 8 months.
Just quote here from the Wall Street Journal, maybe your comment on this. It is still too early to tell how many instances of fraud will eventually be traced to the Home Depot breach. The flood of recent incidents across numerous retailers means that cardholders may have shopped at more than one merchant that had been attacked. I hadn't thought about this until I read this, making it difficult to decipher which fraudulent transaction is tied to which breach. Banks also may have found fraudulent transactions stemming from the Home Depot hacking before they were aware that the breach had occurred.
Right. And then the other thing is that Home Depot, in many ways, may be found liable for a lot of what happened with this because of the way they handle security. The New York Times had a report about former employees talking about how poor the investment in security was at the company, and that they were told when they wanted to get more security training, they had to, we sell hammers, why do you want more security training?
Right. I got to bring this up before our first break, because I read that your story on Ars Technica about Home Depot's former security architect.
Right.
A guy named Ricky Joe Mitchell.
Yes.
Who apparently was pretty good at what he did at a previous company, and he got fired. Tell the story.
All right. So he ends
up being in charge of security for Home Depot, right?
So this guy, he knew he was going to be fired from this oil company in West Virginia called EnerVest Operations.
EnerVest Operations, right.
And he, when he found out he was going to be fired through back channels, he decided he was going to wreak vengeance on his employer. And he actually accessed the servers at his company remotely and reset them, essentially erasing them back to, set them back to factory settings, is what the Justice Department said.
Wow.
And then...
Just for revenge.
And then he went into the office before they had shut off his access to the office, and he unplugged a bunch of network equipment, and he disabled the cooling systems in the server room, so the number of systems failed from overheating. And he ended up doing over $1 million worth of damage just in lost business for the company. It couldn't get its office back online for 30 days.
Okay, wait a minute. So how did he become senior architect for IT security at Home Depot?
Well, he got fired, and this was while they were still investigating what had happened after he got fired. He moves to Georgia and applies for a job at Home Depot. And within a few months, he was promoted to senior security architect. And he became the guy in charge of Home Depot security. Meanwhile, while he's working at Home Depot as their security guy, and he's in charge of security at all of their stores. He's the one who's in charge of deciding how they're going to put security in at all of their stores for their computer systems. Meanwhile, the Justice Department is investigating him for having sabotaged this other company.
And EnerVest Operating.
Right. And so while he was working as a security architect, he got indicted for sabotaging this other company.
We sell hammers. What do we need security for? How did this guy get promoted? That's the story. Anyway, that's Sean's story today on Ars Technica. He's got another story to tell us about when we get back. 410-662-8780. You can find a link to Sean's story at arstechnica.com or go to the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. When we get back, more on the security breach, the hacking that's still going on in the cyber retail world. 410-662-8780 if you have a question for Sean. Welcome back to Midday. Midday on Tech with Sean Gallagher from Ars Technica. You do wonder where this is all going, and how many more of these breaches can we take? What kind of losses are we talking about? Fraud losses from existing bank accounts and credit card accounts rose 47% last year to $16 billion. This is according to a research firm in Greenwich, Connecticut, Javelin Strategy and Research, again quoted in the Wall Street Journal. You know, what's going to happen, Sean? I don't know if you predict the future here. Do you think consumers will change their habits? Is this enough to scare people away from using plastic?
I think that people will probably continue to use credit cards because of the convenience, and they will continue to pay interest rates that are higher than they should be.
And annual fees
that are higher than they should be because they're being used to pay for these anti-fraud measures that credit card companies are using to detect fraud.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, in the long term, we're going to move towards a different sort of payment system. One of the things that came out of the Apple announcements this past week or two was the Apple Pay system, which uses what's called near-field communication, NFC, to send data from your phone to a register. And there are other systems similar to this, these tap-and-pay systems that are out there, and Google Wallet, that
I know about these things. Right. I've seen people use them. I saw one used yesterday in a Starbucks. I mean, but what makes you think those are any more secure?
Well, those have, to some degree, have greater encryption, better encryption of the data that's being passed back and forth. The retailer actually never gets a hold of your credit card information. All that happens is that there's a transaction that happens that you're authenticated for by information that is sent wirelessly to the register. Hmm. And it's all encrypted, passes through the register, and then it comes back with an okay, and it charges your account.
It sounds safer.
And the company,
until someone figures out how to breach that.
Exactly. And part of the problem is that, you know, in Apple's case, that information is going to go into your iCloud account.
Ah, let's talk about the iCloud here for a moment.
Wrapping back around here.
Let's talk about, I have some questions for you that regard this retail breach at Home Depot, but I'll get back to those in a moment. Let's talk about iCloud and cloud technology and security. I mentioned that, and everybody paid a lot of attention, when celebrities were affected by this. I guess the large question, I'd like to get your assessment of just how safe are these things. Let's start with iCloud, and then there's also the Google Cloud.
Well, iCloud and the Google Cloud are a lot safer today than they were a few weeks ago. Let's put it that way. Hmm. Apple has made a number of changes to how it does its cloud password protection. Both Google and Apple are encouraging people to use what's called two-factor authentication. It's often abbreviated as number 2FA. Okay. And what that is where when you do something with your account, they send you a code to your phone or to your device that you then have to enter to complete the transaction so that they know that it's at least the person who has the phone who's doing the transaction.
Give us an example.
So, for example, I go on to iTunes and I want to buy something, and I've got two-factor authentication turned on. When I try to do that transaction, Apple sends me a code in a message that pops up on my screen and says I have to enter this code in order to complete the transaction. Once I do that, after I've entered my password for my Apple ID, and then I put in this code, it completes the transaction and says, okay, this is the person who I think it is, which basically turns your phone or whatever device you're using into your key to get into just about everything.
Now, how do you get two-factor authentication?
You have to go to Apple's website
and set it up?
And set it up for your Apple ID account.
Do you know about Google?
Google has the same thing. They have a way for you to go into your account settings and set up a two-factor authentication. They send you a four-digit code, usually, mm-hmm. to enter into your account when you're going to log on from a new device, for example. So, for example, I want to add a new phone to my Google account, or I'm going to a web browser to sign into my account that I've not been at before. Say I'm at the library and I'm signing into Google with my account.
Yeah.
It will send me a message, and I have to enter the four digits that come to me in order to get into the site with my account. And then it'll ask me, do you want me to remember this server, machine again?
That's an extra step, but it does sound safer. I mean, I like that. It's a way of verifying for them that you're who you are, right?
And it prevents accounts from being taken over.
You're the authentic user.
Right.
Right.
It prevents accounts from being taken over. And
yeah,
it also gets rid of the stupid security questions issue. So, you know, right now when you sign up for an account, it asks
what was
you
the color of
the
your
three
first
security
car?
Questions,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things about those is that those are details that people who know you, or if you're a celebrity, people who read your Wikipedia page know about you, mm-hmm. right? Or people who follow you in various ways. So, you know, your ex-boyfriend, your ex-girlfriend, your stalker.
Mother's maiden name.
They all know these things, your mother's maiden name, your pet's name, where you were born, right?
Right.
So those things are awful questions to ask for security purposes, especially when somebody's going specifically after you, right? So what a lot of people have done to prevent that from being used against them is to just flat-out lie on those questions. They come out with an answer that is either a random string of letters that they've written down someplace, or it's an answer that's totally not correct that only they know.
I never thought of doing that. I always answer truthfully.
Right. So, what was your first pet? A llama, say,
yeah.
right? So for example, like that. So yeah. And you do these things so that people can't go in and guess your answers based on knowing you. But this two-factor authentication gets that out of the way. It requires you to physically have possession of the device. Or you have to have a recovery key, which is usually like printed on a piece of paper, and you've got to hide it someplace so that if you ever lose your phone, the only way to get your account reinstalled onto a new device is to enter this long recovery key.
Right. So two-factor authentication, but you have to do a little work there. You have to set it up yourself. It shouldn't take more than a few minutes.
Well, the thing about Apple is they put a three-day delay on
you
doing it because they don't want you – they don't want it to be possible for somebody to hijack your account, turn on two-factor authentication, and you then not have the ability to get to the account.
You're locked out.
Right.
I see. And what happened with the iCloud breach that led to, you know, the exposure of Jennifer Lawrence and others? They were just able to guess?
Well, they were able to guess lots of times.
What did you call it?
Brute force. Yes. So they basically threw passwords at it all day long. It's what's called a dictionary attack. So you have a dictionary, which is a file that contains lots and lots of words that are commonly used as passwords. Or they may specifically tailor a dictionary for a specific account based on things they know about the person, like the pet's name and things like that, that they think will be passwords that there are used in various combinations. And these attacks can take a very long time. And because of the way that the Apple Cloud service, the iCloud service is set up, it's a secure connection, it takes a lot longer for these passwords to be sent, these authentication tokens to be sent. And Apple thought, nobody's going to take the time to do this, to beat on these sites for this long to get into these. And also they thought that, you know, if somebody lost their phone, we can't use their phone as an authentication device, so we can't put this two-factor authentication on the iCloud backup, for example, or on Find My iPhone.
Right.
Because if you don't have your iPhone, you can't use your iPhone to find your iPhone, right?
Right.
So,
that's crazy.
So there were no lockouts on this. It didn't say, you know, with a lot of systems, you guess the password three times wrong and it locks
and you're
you
locked out. Yeah.
Well, there was no lockout on this system. And so somebody was able to basically, for a very long period of time, make thousands and thousands of guesses at passwords over time until they finally got the right one, and that unlocked the account, and they were able to get in, and they were actually able to pull down, if you have your phone set up to back up to the cloud, I did an article on this, you can actually use these software tools that are out there to download the whole backup of your phone, and your phone gets backed up incrementally over time. So you may not realize there are things that are in the cloud that were backed up from your phone that are still there up in the cloud. So I found photos that were like a year and a half old that had long been deleted off my phone that were in my iCloud backup. They were able to pull these down from the people they targeted. And it doesn't just include photos. It includes your call records. It includes all the SMS messages and Messenger messages you sent to somebody else and their phone numbers, your email inbox, and the address book that you have, all the phone numbers, everybody you contact, so and their email addresses. So when they accessed these accounts, they not only got photos, but they also got all these other personal contacts that were associated with these people that they were able to use to then go and try and hack those phones. So it was a huge amount of personal data that was sitting on the iCloud service.
So we don't fully know, because probably these celebrities who were affected and other people don't want us to know just how affected they were by it, what the consequences for them.
We can assume that there was a lot of personal information exposed.
Embarrassing, potentially embarrassing.
And the only thing that is of any benefit to anyone about this whole thing is that these people who were doing this tended to focus just on the photos because there was a ring of people who essentially traded celebrity photos, celebrity naked photos specifically, that existed that were big advocates of this stuff, and they were out there to find photos. There's been a lot of
big advocates of
they were like, it was like a club of people who traded amongst themselves photos they had stolen from celebrities' phones.
Okay.
And then what appears to have happened is that one guy bought into the group, and then to impress people, he posted a bunch of photos to 4chan.
I meant to ask you that. I don't know what that is.
Okay,
4chan
what is
4chan?
It's an image board, but 4chan is like the dark corner of the internet. It's where Anonymous started, for example.
The hackers.
It was basically set up as an anime board, anime image board, a clone of what has been in Japan for many, many years, back in the early 2000s.
Okay.
By a 15-year-old guy.
The number 4, C-H-A-N.
Right.
And that's where they posted a lot of these?
They posted a lot of these images there. And the reason they do it there is because it's an anonymous place, you know, at least anonymous to some degree. And images fly off of there quickly. Everything gets purged. So what happens a lot is that things get posted there, and within a few days they're gone. And that's purposely done because that avoids the issue of copyright infringement and things like that. By the time somebody realizes that something's been posted there, it's already been taken down.
Gone. Sean Gallagher is the IT editor for the Condé Nast technology site Ars Technica. He's based here in Baltimore and joins us from time to time on Midday to talk tech. We're talking about technology and breaches today, cyber breaches, retail breaches, and cloud technology breaches. 410-662-8780. If you'd like to join us with a question for Sean, here's a question from, let's see, this is Richard. Yeah, Richard's question, I want to take him first. This came in by email from Pikesville. Does it make any difference whether one selects debit versus credit when swiping a bank card in terms of one's vulnerability to this kind of malware?
It's determined basically on what the malware is and what it's looking for. You're protected to the point, to the degree that when you use an ATM transaction, you're entering a PIN number, and that's a separate piece of information, and that can't easily be grabbed by these systems, which are scraping credit card data out of memory.
Okay.
But other malware could grab your ATM card, and there are other systems that are used to try and grab ATM data. And in fact, there was an arrest. There was a recent thing.
You're a little
here.
Safer with a debit.
A little safer with a debit card. Yeah. There was a recent case in Howard County, I believe it was, where somebody was setting up an ATM skimmer. They were actually putting hardware on the ATM machine to try and read people's ATM cards, their debit cards, as they were pushing them into the ATM machine. And those systems use the same technology as the card reader that's in the ATM. Plus, they put cameras on it to try and catch your PIN numbers you're entering it and things like that. So,
is anyone going back to cash? There's a question. I don't know if this is a good question to ask or not, but I am curious if any of this stuff has given people second thoughts about all the swipes that we make every place every day. Anyone decided to go back to cash and carry?
It's funny you should ask that because you know some of the people at Home Depot who worked in IT. One of the guys who was interviewed by the Times said, "I tell anybody that I know to pay cash at Home Depot."
He works for Home Depot. 410-662-8780. Dan Rodericks here with Sean Gallagher. A short break. We'll be right back. Back talking some tech with Sean Gallagher, tech journalist, the IT editor for the Condé Nast technology site, Ars Technica. If you haven't seen arstechnica.com, you want to check it out. Lots of good stories on there. Very, very rich website. What are the rules concerning disclosure of these data breaches? Chris wants to know. It feels like the news gets out very slowly, bit by bit, never quite enough to do something about it. This is from Chris in Parkville.
Right. Now, that varies state to state, unfortunately. In many states, if there is only a certain kind of data breached, for example, what's called the track 2 data on your credit card.
That's just on the strip.
Right. So on the strip, there are 3 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
The third track is generally not used. The first track is called what's called track 1, and it has your full name and your account data and things like that. The second track is just your credit card data, just the credit card without your name. Just the number.
Okay.
And if it's just the track 2 data that gets exposed, in some states, that's not considered to be a privacy breach.
So they don't have to report it
to the state. And in other states, it is. And in some states, it has to be over a certain size.
Why does that exist? Is it because retailers don't want to have to report that and scare off customers?
Of course they don't. You don't want to admit that your systems have been breached.
Yeah.
And cause a scare.
But what do you think of that at that level, the fact that your number has been breached?
I think that at that level, the problem is that data can still be used to do transactions, and it's commonly sold online. There are whole marketplaces where that kind of data is sold. There's a whole industry around it, mostly based out of Eastern Europe and Russia, of these sites that trade in credit card information.
Do you happen to know what the law is in Maryland about disclosure?
I do not. Yeah. I do not.
I'm sorry, we don't know that.
We'll have to double check on that.
Okay.
I can get an answer back to you, and we can post online.
Okay, thank you, Sean. As far as Home Depot goes, this five-month-long hack, do we know what five months were in the hack? what the period was that
the
was
period,
covered?
The period was up until the beginning of September.
Oh, right up until this was reported then.
Right.
Just about. Okay. And they decided to announce this to everybody?
It was revealed by other companies.
It was not announced by Home Depot.
It was announced by Home Depot. They acknowledged it.
Okay.
But there were reports that came out from other sources. There's a security reporter, Brian Krebs, who used to work for the Washington Post,
mm-hmm.
who does a site called Krebs on Security. And he's been on top of the stuff since the beginning. He covers all of these breaches. And he got information about this before it was publicly acknowledged.
I remember he was on Fresh Air with Terry Gross talking about that.
Right.
Yeah. And he got this too? He got the Home
He got
Depot?
This too. He has a lot of contacts in that in the hacker world, we'll just say.
Let's take some calls for Sean Gallagher now. Barbara in Baltimore County, thanks for holding. Go right ahead with your question, please.
Hello. About this two-step verification process requiring you to, add another email address. Well, I tried to sign into one account the other day, and it said add another email address, which I did, and I went to go in that email address, and it told me the same thing. So eventually it forces you to put a phone number in there, but I did manage to get into one Outlook account, and I tried to change my password, and that required another email address. So they assume that if you enter the correct password, they still assume at first that you are not the owner of that email account. And I went into Yahoo and I changed my secret questions. And I've always used sophisticated passwords, which I write down, and sophisticated fictitious answers to the secret questions, which I write down. And I never put my actual birthday and or the real answers to the secret questions. But, you know, people are very upset about NSA having all the data on who we call on our phones, but you know the email people have been, you know, recording all this information for years.
Thank you, Barbara. Her point about having to have another level of or provide more contact information or the
right.
email address
well,
in order to have that.
Most of these accounts want you to have a rescue account.
A rescue,
right? Mm-hmm. So that's when you. When you need to change your password, reset your password, they have this other email address. They email a link to you to confirm that it's you.
Right.
And these accounts ask for your phone number, specifically your mobile number, because many of them require the ability to send you something via SMS
mm-hmm.
to alert you, to send this two-factor code to you. So yeah, they need your phone number, and they want an alternate email address to contact you if there's a problem, and the result is that they have this information in their systems. Whether or not that's a breach of privacy or not,
yeah.
I mean, that's required for access to the device. They need to know that's your phone, and they're sending you the code to your phone.
It kind of falls under you can't have everything.
Right.
Right? If you want increased security, if you want the two-factor authentication, you got to give them something to get it.
But
right?
This is also a big deal to people overseas and to people who don't have phone, they don't want to have a cell phone. So, for example, you can't get two-factor authentication if you don't have a cell phone.
Yeah.
So, because that requires the ability to send you an SMS message.
A question about cell phones from Gary in Annapolis. Are there any known vulnerabilities to operating systems other than iPhones, meaning are all of our smartphones susceptible to viruses or hacks?
Well, the iPhone is actually less susceptible to viruses and malware than Android is. And that's because Apple does this vetting process and all the software that gets installed into the iPhone. Everything has to come through the Apple Store. Google allows this sideloading of applications, and there are a lot of different Google application stores. I tried to crack the iPhone 5S for a story I was doing where I tried to root it, mm-hmm. and the current rootkits that are out there, you have to have the password to get into the phone in order to be able to what they call root the phone.
When you use the term root, you're
that
talking
means
about,
I'm getting down to the I'm getting yeah. my I'm getting access to the actual operating system itself, okay. and giving me the ability to install other things onto it.
And you say you couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it without the password. There are different rooting tools available. There are lots of people who want to crack their phones so they can install other software on their phones. And that's a security problem, but it's also something that a lot of people want to be able to do in order to install what they want on their phones. There's a lot of applications out there that are sort of like power tools that don't go along with what Apple considers to be safe to run on your phone. The same thing is true with Android. Android is easy to crack. Android is designed to be cracked. It's basically an open source operating system, and there are plenty of tools out there for you to root your Android device and install things on it. I've got a tablet with me that I was showing Dan earlier that's got
a
Nexus tablet that's got something called Kali NetHunter installed on it, which is actually a whole separate Linux operating system that allows me to do network attacks and things like that to do penetration testing on different devices.
And people use that to check on security, right?
Right.
They use
right.
it. They take it actually into companies, into headquarters
right.
to see what's going on, right?
Right. Okay. And there are all sorts
and
of...
Why did you bring that up, though?
I bring it up
why do you want everyone to know that you have that toy?
Because this is the sort of thing that's out there. I mean, there are other versions of the Android operating system people can install into their phones.
That's safer?
That allow them to do different things and are in some cases are disconnected from Google. So if you want to have the privacy from Google,
yeah.
There's also something called
if you don't want to be in the cloud.
Right. Now there's also something called the Black Phone.
What's the Black Phone?
The Black Phone is a new phone built for privacy. And it's based on Android on a version of Android called PriveOS. It's a private OS.
Who makes it?
It's made by a company called the company is called Black Phone, but it's a spinoff of a company called Silent Circle, based in Switzerland. But they have offices here in Maryland, in National Harbor.
And they're selling it. Their sales pitch is
it's secure. It's a secure phone, and it's designed to give you all sorts of control over what the software in your phone does. You can shut down what its access is to your private information, and it has encrypted phone call and encrypted and disposable burn this message type stuff for instant messaging.
Let's take another question for Sean Gallagher. Catherine in Ayrville, Pennsylvania. Thank you for calling Midday.
Hi. This is just a sort of a simple question, I guess. But I used to have a flashlight app on my iPhone, and I use it pretty often when I go to work. I used it one day, and then the next day when I went to use it, it was gone. It had disappeared from my screen. So when I went into my apps to try and download one again, I always get free stuff. You know, I don't pay for anything. And it wanted my credit card number. And I thought, well, I'm never going to buy anything at the iStore. Why do they want my credit card number? And I didn't give it just because I don't need one more piece of information out there. But is that silly of me to feel like that?
No.
And is that why are they doing that?
Well, in this case, I think what happened was there was actually an application, a flashlight app that was out for Android as well, that was requesting more information from people than the companies felt was responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Apple deleted them from the iPhone App Store because they violated some of the terms of what developers could do from the App Store. And they probably wanted you to buy a paid version, which would have required your credit card number. But if you were trying to download it out of band, like to try and install it, and they ask your credit card number off of their website or something like that, I'd be a bit leery.
Marshall in Nottingham, a question for Sean Gallagher. Go right ahead, please.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
My question concerns credit score ratings. Now, my credit score was in the mid-830s, 834, 835, steadily. and just last week it dropped down to 720. Hmm. I'm wondering if that could be an indication of fraud.
You should get a hold of your credit report and take a look at it and see if there's anything going on that indicates someone else is using your identity.
Your credit card statement.
Well, also a credit card report, because a credit report from a credit agency, because your credit rating is done by these credit bureau, these agencies that rate your entire credit score across all of your finances.
Could it be affected that quickly?
It could be affected if there was a certain amount of additional debt taken out under your name, under your Social Security number.
Did Marshall notice that? Marshall, did you notice any strange transactions?
No, there were no strange transactions. I called Visa right away as soon as I received the report. I get them monthly. And they said there may be two indications of a problem, but they wouldn't tell me what they were and suggested I should get a credit report,
right,
which I did right away.
Okay.
It hasn't arrived yet.
Okay. Huh. The thing is that your credit report, your credit score can be affected by other things you do, like taking out a loan or somebody else taking out a loan under your name. So if your Social Security number was shared with somebody and they open an account under your name, there may be a credit card that was set up under your name that you don't know about. And that would be a reason for you to want to check your credit score.
Joel is our next caller. Joel's in Essex. Welcome to Midday.
Hi. I'm an attorney, and yesterday I had a case, and it was on the lower end of, I guess, the severity of these types of cases, but it was an allegation of identity fraud where a person went online, figured out the true owner's Social Security number, and using that was able to allegedly open a credit card account. However, there was never any transfer of goods or money, so there was no real restitution involved. But the penalty for that is incarceration up to 18 months. And I think a financial penalty of up to $1,000, but that's at the lower end. And there is a scale, as you go up the line for these charges. I just thought I'd let you know that.
For identity theft charges. So they can go up. But did you just say the maximum penalty was 18 months in that case?
Yes, in this particular case.
In that case.
And it was it was identity theft, and it was kind of unique in that the transaction was not consummated, but
I
it was
understand.
Attempted to be.
Yeah. I thank you for calling that in, Joel. It makes me curious about what exactly the Maryland law is on that. That's another form of fraud that's we've talked about in the past.
Right.
Identity theft, just creating accounts based on
Social Security numbers
or what other personal information.
And there's been a lot of Social Security number breaches over the past few years as well. I mean, there was one at the University of Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
Which we talked about.
Yeah. Just to go over this one last time. So if you were at Home Depot sometime in the last year, if you shopped there, used a credit card, especially at a self-checkout, check your credit card statement.
Absolutely.
And don't be surprised if your credit card company issues you a new card given this breach.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Sean, thanks again for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we didn't get to talk about BlackBerry. You have 30 seconds.
It's a phone that has a 4-inch square screen and a physical keyboard.
Yeah, well, that's what they had before.
It's huge. It's the size of a passport.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a 4-inch diagonal screen. So
I'm surprised. I lost track of BlackBerry. I guess they're still trying to sell products.
They're going after a niche market. They're going after the business market.
Sean Gallagher is the IT editor of the Condé Nast technology site Ars Technica. You can find links to his website on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page, or just go to Ars Technica, ArsTechnica.com. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. It's the first hour of Midday. We're going to take a break here for a lunch provided today by Breathe Bookstore Cafe, serving vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free savories, sweets, coffee, tea, juices, and more 7 days a week, located on the Avenue in Hamden. Stay tuned for the news and then the second hour of Midday.